Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser and I am just thrilled to be coming to you today, this last Friday of August and as we near the end of summer, with a fantastic guest, someone I've been back and forth talking with for the last few months and hoping to get on Alive to Thrive. He's someone I've admired at a distance. He's probably someone you've heard of. He is actually a sought-after speaker at corporate conferences and entrepreneurial events, and he's spoken on stages as large as 16,000 in the audience. And he has worked with professional athletes, political leaders, and even a former U.S. president. And he's going to be talking today about influence and about turning adversaries into allies, which is the title of his new book, and I'm talking about Bob Berg. He is also, you probably have heard of Bob because he wrote the infamous Go-Giver parable with John David Mann. John was on my radio show a few years ago, and he also wrote Endless Referrals. And he has, his books have been on best-selling lists with the Wall Street Journal and Business Week. So welcome to the show, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Brenda. And I know that you and I have some mutual friends in the area, including Tessa Greenspan, who's one of my all-time favorite human beings.
That's right. Well, shout out to Tessa. She has she probably was the first one that told me about the Go-Giver book. And I know her name was mentioned in the back of it. And, you know, that parable and that story just, I think, surprised everybody how well it did. Did it surprise you and John David Mann?
Well, you know, I think we went into it feeling that there was an audience for it and that it would have some success. It took off, you know, faster than I think we thought it would, just because I think the early adapters were the ones who were already very successful people who were living their lives and conducting their business that way anyway. And what they did is they began to pass it along and recommend it to others, and I think that's how it sort of started. And, of course, just having John David Mann as the lead writer and storyteller was a big boon because he's an absolutely brilliant guy. So I think everything sort of came together in a very positive, perfect storm, and that got it
well,
off to the
good start.
Well,
definitely, and John David has written so many books, and I was thrilled to have him back, actually, when I was on iWatch Radio. But there's a thread, I see a thread between that book, the principles of giving first, give before you get, and the principles of putting others' self-interest first. And I see that thread carrying into your new book that we're here to talk about, Adversaries into Allies, Winning People Over, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. And I think these principles of ultimate influence that you talk about in your book are so relevant in today, not only for business settings, and sales and networking, but also in our personal lives and in society and in some of the things we're seeing. And I want to talk a little bit about how you got started with this concept and inspired you to think deeply about these issues of influence.
Well, I've been extremely blessed to have great parents. And my dad is probably the best I've ever seen when it came to what I would call people skills. And that is just being able to work with people in such a way that you're able to bring out people's best. You're able to develop those know, like, and trust relationships with people. And I always say that you know, with my dad, and he's always been the type of person who once he would go somewhere once, everybody just loved him. And it was always because he was genuinely interested in them. There was nothing phony about it. There was nothing manipulative about it. He really, which is why I think I say in the book, the most effective people skill of all is a genuine interest in the other person. And, you know, my dad always has had this desire to make people feel genuinely good about themselves. And that's really what I call ultimate influence. And that is, but there's nothing self-sacrificial about it. It means that you also attain what you want. And that's why I say that I define ultimate influence as simply the ability to get the results you want when dealing with others and in such a way that you help them to feel genuinely good about themselves, about the situation, and about you. And when you can do that, you know, that's really such a difference maker. It makes your life a lot more fun, a lot less stressful, certainly. And, you know, in business, it makes it a lot more profitable.
Now, this is something that is hard to teach. It's almost something that people have to maybe have innately. Now, you observed it in your dad. Was it something, though, that you had to develop over time? I mean, we often teach what we are, you know, our lessons we need to learn ourselves. Are these lessons that you had to learn yourself?
I think that's a very valid point, and that's true, because while my dad had, and I think my dad did have this innately, although I would also say, though, that it isn't something you need to have innately. It's something that can be taught and can be learned. A person just has to have the desire to learn it, because in a sense, it's really a shift both in attitude, and it's a matter of learning some skills. And so, but I did not come by it naturally. And so it was something I really had to learn. And once I embraced it in my life, it was something that really, I just saw how much better it made life, both for me and for those around me. So, yeah.
Well, the thing I want to ask you about is sometimes in business settings, there's a lot of war analogy and let's, you know, kill them, let's go get them. And, you know, there's a lot of masculine language I've noticed being a woman. But also sometimes in sales training, you know, people are prepared for battle or expecting resistance or how to overcome objections. And so this is a different approach. And so when you go into a business setting to work with, say, management teams or sales teams of any types, how do you change the storyline for them if they have been thinking in a way of adversaries as enemies?
Right. And so often the sales process was an adversarial one. You know, it was could you, you know, sell that other person? Could you, you know, overcome, like you said, I love how you said, could you overcome their objections? And when you think it over the word overcome is from the same Latin root as the word convince, which is convincere. And Dale Carnegie said, a person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still, which means you really can't convince someone. Or if you do convince them, you're probably not going to persuade them. So, you know, in their mind, they might logically know that you're correct, you're right, and they're wrong. But not only are they not going to change their actions or their thought process because of it, they're probably going to be even more resolute in what they already believed. And so, yes, sales itself is not not combat. Sales itself, and the best salespeople, the most profitable salespeople know this, sales itself is simply a matter of providing value to another human being. One of my old heroes, Harry Brown used to say that in a true free market economy, profit is simply the result of pleasing another person. In other words, as I often say when I speak at a sales conference, I'll say, hey, you know, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. And everyone laughs because, you know, we know it's true. They're going to buy for their own reasons, which they should. Selling is too often thought of by people, unfortunately sometimes by salespeople, as trying to convince somebody to buy something they don't want or need, when selling is actually the very opposite of that. Selling at its essence, at its very essence, is simply finding out or determining what somebody does want or need and helping them to get it. When you approach it that way, when you approach it not as, you know, I'm doing this for myself, but I'm doing this to help another person, when your focus is on providing value to that person is going to feel good about you. They're going to know you, like you, trust you. They're going to respect you. And if you're able to, as a good salesman will do, be able to align or match the benefits of your product or service with their wants, their needs, their desires, they're going to buy from you. And this is why we say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means the focus must be on the value. The value must come first, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided. So when sales is looked at that way, not only do you have happy customers who become your personal walking ambassadors, but you actually profit much more.
I love that, and it's actually what I've taught in fundraising, working with nonprofits all my life, is to put the self-interest of the donor first and not start viewing statistics about how many lives you've saved or how great your nonprofit is, but really to find out the self-interest of that donor. And it's very similar. And so what you write resonates with me on a very personal level, because I've witnessed it. And I also see the difference in leadership where you have someone who's trying to be persuasive versus, you know, subtle manipulation. You know, a lot of whether they're board of directors or whether they're CEOs or whoever, what do you see the big differences between persuasion and manipulation?
Well, there is a big difference, and it begins. And first of all, let's understand, though, that, you know, when it comes to influence, and on a very, very basic level, Brenda, influence is simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. I mean, by definition, that is influence. You can influence, you can move that person through manipulating them, or you could do it through persuading them. Now, obviously, you know, you can tell by the tone that manipulation is not the way that I would suggest is the best way. Not only is it not nice, and not only is it not right, but it's typically not as effective either. But they are cousins. Manipulation and persuasion are cousins because both the manipulator and the persuader simply, you know, they both understand human nature. They both understand what moves people, and they both understand how to do so. But that's where it really ends. One of the greatest, not definitions, but I guess explanations I ever read when it came to manipulation versus persuasion was from a book that was written actually back in 1986 by Dr. Paul W. Sweat, a minister from Kentucky at the time, or Tennessee at the time, excuse me, from Memphis. And Dr. Sweat's book was The Art of Talking So That People Will Listen, though it was much more about listening than it was about talking. And in the book, Dr. Sweat described it this way. Manipulation aims at control, not cooperation. It does not consider the good of the other party. It results in a win-lose situation. He goes on to say that in direct contrast to the manipulator, the persuader seeks to enhance the self-esteem of the other party. The result is that people act responsibly because they're treated as responsible or response-able, self-directing individuals. So it begins with intent. The manipulator, Brenda, may not be trying to hurt the other person, but they don't necessarily care if they do, as long as they get their own way. They're very eye-focused or me-focused.
Man,
you know,
this couldn't be more timely. I mean, as you're speaking and explaining the difference, it has been so painfully obvious here in the St. Louis area, and has been showcased on national news, the situation in Ferguson where a young man was shot, whether rightly or wrongly, by an officer. And the resulting situation in Ferguson was that you had a big, heavy presence of police officers, force, SWAT team, you know, the win-lose mentality. And then they replaced the leadership and brought in Captain Johnson, who very, very gracefully displayed ultimate influence through persuasion. He did what you are talking about. He sought to enhance self-esteem. He walked with the people. He talked to the people. He said, I'm one of you. I grew up in this neighborhood. I care about you. He even said the words, I love you, which I have never heard a police officer say, I love you, in the history of my life. But have you been observing this situation and any commentary in terms of, you know, what was the initial approach to quelling the crowds and the anger, and how that shifted to more of a peaceful acceptance that these people were going to be in the streets no matter what? They had to express themselves, and how to manage that crowd.
Well, Captain
any
Johnson obviously was and is pretty amazing. He also happened to utilize all five. Now, I'm sure he hasn't read the book. He's just one of these people who has either learned it or doesn't intuitively. Either way, it's fine. Great. We're glad he did. But he utilized all five of my principles of ultimate influence. Principle number one is to control your own emotions. And if that's where it all starts. Because unless you can control your own emotions, there's no way that you can be part of the solution. You've got to be able to control yourself. Now, we're human beings, so we are emotional creatures. We'd like to think we're logical, and to a certain extent we are, but we're pretty emotion-driven. People make major decisions, as happened here. People made very emotional decisions based on very limited information. Their emotions on both sides, on all sides, got really out of control. So, so what he did is he's come in and all of a sudden, he had control over himself. And it's only when you can control your own emotions and not get sucked in to other people's drama and other people's emotions, it's only when you can control your own emotions that you're in a position to take a negative situation and be able to turn it into a win-win, ultimately, hopefully, but definitely a manageable situation for all concerned. Principle number two of ultimate influence is to understand the clash of belief systems. Well, what is a belief? I define a belief as a subjective truth. In other words, it's the truth as you or I understand the truth to be, which doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth. It means it's our truth. Now, sometimes our truth and the truth are the same, but not always, and not nearly as much as we think. And the reason is because as human beings, we are run by a belief system. We could say an unconscious operating system, if you will. What is our belief system? Well, our belief system is a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, movies, popular culture, popular entertainment, cultural mores, everything we touch, taste, see, smell, hear throughout our lives. However, Brenda, our belief system tends to be pretty well formed by the time we're little more than toddlers. And after that, every new bit of information that comes in tends to simply build upon that basic premise. So people grow up and people live their entire lives saying, thinking, feeling, doing things based on a belief system that they're not even conscious that they have. They are run by their belief system. Now, to add on top of that, so is everyone else. Not just us, everyone is. Now, here's the other thing, and this is what's almost scary, is that as human beings, we tend to believe that everyone else sees the world basically the same way we do. Now, hear me out on this. This is why you often, because how else could we, you know, possibly feel people see it? For example, if you've ever heard someone say, oh, everybody likes that, or nobody feels that way, right? Well, it's not true that nobody does or everybody does. It means we and other people who believe like we do. Or if you've ever said, you know, or heard someone say, and I know I've said this, oh, well, I would never treat someone like that. Well, no, we wouldn't, because it's contrary to our belief system. Now, here's where Captain Johnson comes in. There's all these beliefs taking place, right? And there's a definite clash of belief systems at work here. What he knows, again, whether intuitively or learned or a combination of both, is that you don't necessarily have to understand the other person's belief system. You simply need to be aware that they are probably seeing the world from a different viewpoint than you are. And so long as you acknowledge and as long as you understand that that's the case, now you can create that environment where people can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
So very,
definitely,
very important.
And I think, exactly, and he has definitely the skill to manage people in a way that I've not seen ever done before. And thankfully, the governor did put him in charge, because I think it did change the tone and the system. Now, this book, how long did it take you to write it?
I've worked on it for years. Once I came to an agreement with my publisher as far as what we wanted to do with it and, you know, how we were going to release it, it probably took only about 6 months from that point. But I've been, you know, these are things I've been working on for 30 years, you know, as far as developing.
And who were some of the other authors and speakers that mentored you early on in your life that speak about influence and leadership?
Well, you know, the best book I, to this day, I've ever read on this is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And one of the things that Mr. Carnegie said, I believe, is really when it comes right to, and I believe this was the basic premise of his book, and I believe that once we understand this, it puts us in a position to be able to be an influencer. And that is where he wrote that ultimately people do things for their reasons, not our reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so, so very key to understand. It's what allows us to focus on that other person, understanding that the only way we're going to be able to move someone to action without it being coercive, which typically doesn't last very long. People generally sabotage that anyway, even if they have to go along with you. The only way to do that is the only way to attain someone's commitment to a certain idea is to tie together what you want with what that other person wants, which is why the great influencers are constantly asking themselves questions such as, how does what I'm asking this person to do align with their goals, their wants, their desires, their values? One of my great mentors, and she speaks on leadership and influence and has written many books on it, including Career Moves. Her name is Dondi Scumaci. She speaks to some of the biggest companies and organizations in the world on this topic. And I love what she says about this. When it comes to leadership and influence, she says, compliance will never take you where commitment can go. See, great leaders, great influencers understand that they accomplish great things with others, and the best ones understand that it's never about them, and that really is the great lesson from Dondi. Books that were written that I learned from, such as one of my favorites, was written about the same time as Dale Carnegie, a little bit afterwards, by Les Giblin, called How to Have Confidence and Power in Dealing with People. Well, what a fantastic book. Fantastic book. And then there's more modern books today. Chris Widener has written the, you know, The Art of Influence, and there was the book Influencers, and of course Dr. Robert Cialdini wrote a wonderful book, but I think I recommend this book at every single conference where I speak, and it's called Influence. It's just fantastic. It's the, you know, the six kind of reasons why people will buy from you or join you or follow you or what have you, and it's magnificent. So yeah, I'm certainly not the only game in town. There's some great people out there who I'm just honored and privileged to get to learn from.
When we think of some of the great influencers of history, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., what do you think they had that might be lacking in some of our current leadership? Or do you see some of the traits of Gandhi and King in anyone currently in U.S. leadership, in politics? Let's just pick that field. To bring together and unite people.
Yeah, no, I understand. And it's hard to say because there are those people out there. They may not get the kind of press that, you know, that others get. But they're out there. I mean, you have a person like a Herb Kelleher with Southwest Airlines. Here's a guy who, someone says, "Oh, wait, you're comparing, you know, Kelleher to you know, Gandhi and to Dr. King." Well, no, not in terms of what they've maybe done for the world in terms of philosophy,
but for his employees and
but
customers.
Exactly. Here's a guy who understood intuitively that to the degree that you treat others well, that you make others feel important, genuinely, and feel good about themselves and feel part of a team. You've got to realize they came in as a small, very small startup. The cronyism that took place between the other airlines and the politicians kept them from even starting for 2 years and cost millions of dollars that they didn't have. Once they did get in the game, they have been profitable every single year. Okay, well, over 40 years in an industry in which pretty much all their competitors lose lots of money every year. So yeah, I would say someone like a Herb Kelleher, and of course there's others that are brought up. But what Dr. King and what Gandhi had was, again, they were involved in something bigger than themselves. They weren't thinking about themselves. They were thinking about those whose lives they were touching. They were Simon Sinek, of course, had that terrific TED Talk and has a book by the name of Start with Why. And they began with a why, not the how, but the why. And their why was so big. And part of that was just, you know, making the world a place that they envisioned and making it a world that they felt would be benevolent. How do you get any better than, you know, judge a person not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character? I mean, that is such a humongous way of being. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's bigger than any one person, and I think Dr. King communicated that.
Yeah, with vision. And I like that you talk about the leader of the Southwest Airlines, because that is like one of my favorite airlines. There is such a different customer experience when you go on. They sing happy birthday if someone's having a birthday on flight. They pop champagne if someone's on their honeymoon. They really do put the customer first, and you feel that, and they're happy. They're joking around. They're wearing a very different uniform as well, the flight staff, and they're very personable, and so you really feel that difference in the way the staff communicate with customers. And talk about other companies you've worked with, maybe where you've gotten them to that point to understand how to put the customer first or the needs of the customer, you know, ahead of profit, which, you know, that profit will follow putting the customer's needs first.
Well, you know, again, I think the already great leaders, they already know that, and that's how they run their companies. In fact, most of the companies that I'm brought in to speak for, that's how they run their business, and that's why they identify with it, and they want that culture to just, you know, to be to go through their entire company. But I also get to hear from a lot of people who, you know, a lot of small business owners who said, well, you know, that their business was this and that, and they were struggling, and then what they recognized from the Go-Giver, what, you know, the book was, you know what, I need to shift my focus. It's not about me. And once they understood that, they came at it. And that's why we say just a tiny shift in focus. It's moving from an I focus or a me focus to a you focus or an other focus. In Jim Collins' masterful book, Good to Great, he talked about the level five leaders. And the level five leaders were those leaders who put the interest of their company, put the interest of their employees first. And again, and I want to make it clear and really qualify that when I say place other people's interests first, I do not mean in any way that you should be anybody's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Not at all. It's simply that, as you know, as you've heard me say or read in my books, all things being equal, people will do business with, refer business to, and allow themselves to be influenced by those people they know, like, and trust. And it happens that there's no faster, quicker, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those know, like, and trust feelings toward you from others than by genuinely and authentically moving from focusing on yourself to focusing on bringing value to them.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, saying no tactfully without offending, you know, just to do that. And you talk about that in your book. Can you expand upon that a little bit better?
Sure.
In terms of...
Yeah, well, you know, it's important because it's tough to say no to people sometimes. Why? Well, we're human beings. We want to please others. You know, most of us would like to be able to come through for others. And when someone asks us to do something that, you know, isn't out of line or by any means, but it's not something that we choose to do, we need to be able to say no, but do it in such a way that not only do we not offend that person, but we also you know, don't kind of wimp out either and do that which we really don't want to do. You know, it's interesting because one of the politically correct sayings that has been going around now for a few years, and I've seen very famous people teach this and say it, and I've been at seminars where I've seen the seminar leaders teach this, is they'll say, you know what, you know, when you want to say no, just say no. No is a complete sentence, you know. And I see people nodding their heads, you know, in empowerment. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to do that from now on. But really, is that what you're going to do? Are you going to just rudely say, you know, somebody asked you to serve on a committee, let's just say. Are you going to just say, no, I don't want to? Well, first of all, it's rude. There's no cause for it. Secondly, you're probably going to turn that ally into an adversary, because who likes to be spoken to like that? And third, you know, you're going to renounce any further possibility of doing business with them or what have you. But the main reason you're not going to say no like that is because it's not congruent with your value system of treating people with kindness and respect. So I wouldn't suggest that as a way to say no. Now, the other thing people do sometimes is they will kind of tell a little fib to get out of doing that thing in order to maybe not hurt the other person's feelings or to let themselves off the hook. So they might say, well, I would, but I don't have time. Well, the problem with that is first of all, it's not that you don't have time. As human beings, we make time to do the things we want to do, the things that we value. What it is you really just don't want to do it. You know, you value the idea of not doing it more than you value the idea of doing it, which is okay. But the other thing is, when we tell that little lie, the other person probably, you know, they're going to be able to answer that. And when they do so in a way that's persuasive and shows you where time really isn't an issue, now you're in a position where you either have to admit that you are lying, and, you know, which is going to kind of make them mad, and you're not going to feel good. You're going to feel kind of yucky. Or in order to save face, you've then got to accept the gig, so to speak. You've got to do that thing that you don't want to do. So I suggest there's a better way. And this is going to allow you to honor the other person, respect them, and at the same time respect your own boundaries. And it's simply that when the person asks you to do the thing, whatever they ask, you simply say, thank you so much for asking. While it's not something I'd like to do, please know how honored I am to be asked. And that's it. What you've done is you've been respectful. You let them know that you are honored to be asked, which honors them, but you just let them know it's not something you choose to do. What you didn't do is you didn't make an excuse. You didn't give them something to grab onto or in any way try to justify it. Instead, what you simply did is you thank them for thinking of you. You let them know that while it's not something you'd like to do, you're very honored to have been asked. And so when you do that, now you've made your point in a way that's kind and tactful and gentle but very effective. Now, someone might be thinking, okay, Bob, that's fine, but people are used to being able to sort of, steamroll me, so what if the person says, well, but come on, we really, really need you to do it. All you do in this case is, again, you go back to controlling your own emotions. Don't get upset. Don't be defensive. You're simply going to smile and say, oh, I appreciate that so much. I'd rather not. But, again, thank you so much for asking. And if you
now
do that,
Go ahead.
Just to say, if you do that and do that a couple of times, you're going to set yourself free because you're never again going to have to worry about having to say no, because you're gonna have the formula. I can't tell you how many people thank me for the way I've said no. I've had people, send an email with a smiley face, because this works by email too, saying, well, that is the nicest no I have ever received, and people appreciate that.
Right. And certainly I've gotten plenty of no's from being in fundraising all my life, but I want to just talk to you about some charitable work that you do in a group that you didn't say no to. You said a big yes. I had a smile that you have a heart for animals and animal rescue organizations and adopting animals, and you adopted a stray cat, or she adopted you, as we like to say. Tell us a little bit about that story, and because it's in your book and you devoted a whole chapter to it, and also tell us about the organization that you give some of your free time to. So tell us about your cat.
Yeah. Well, that's Liberty. And by the way, dedicating a chapter to it, the chapters in the book, as you know, are like maybe one page or two pages sometimes. So I don't want people to get intimidated and think, a big part of the book is about my cat, Liberty.
Yeah,
but,
no.
A neighbor told me there was a stray cat or feral cat that was outside that looked hungry, and I went outside to check on it, and she looked very skinny and hungry and mean, so I got some cat kibble and had just put it down, and she wouldn't even come as hungry as she was. She wouldn't even come toward it when I was there. So I backed off. And by the way, I love all animals. I'm especially fond of dogs, and I've always had dogs. I had never actually had a cat before. So while I love all animals, I hadn't really had experience with a cat. So I was kind of figuring this out as I went along. But she would eat, as long as I was far away. So in other words, she didn't feel any threat. And so every day I would feed her at the same time, and she came and was expecting it, but I would, kind of move the bowl closer to my home every time because it was out in the field where I first saw her. And, eventually I had the bowl of kibble in the on my patio, and she would come in to the patio to eat, but I always left the back door open, so that she knew she had an escape route. And this is very important for four-legged critters and two-legged critters. And, eventually I had her even, she came in the house, but as long as I left the sliding window door open, so she had an escape route. And this kind of kept going on. Now, finally, I wanted to see if I could close the door behind her so she'd know that she was welcome in the house and could hang out in the house. But as I started to close the sliding door, as soon as I did, she looked back really fast as though she was going to escape. So I reopened it even wider. and she was fine, and she kept eating. And then I slowly just closed it behind her, and she was fine. Now after that, she came in the house. She ate in the house, came for breakfast, and came for dinner, and at night would hang out in the house and sleep and nap and play and so forth. Now, here was the story. Here was the lesson that I took from it with the door behind her. It's not that she wanted to escape. It's not that she wanted to leave, let's say. It's that she wanted to know she could leave. And this is what I call the law of the out or the back door. And the law of the out or back door simply says the bigger the out or back door you give someone, the less they'll feel the need to take it. Because people want to feel, people want to be in control of themselves and in control of their decisions. And if they feel as though you're pressuring them and you know, you might be able to one time get them to, you know, coerce them to do that thing, which is really a form of manipulation, but they're going to avoid you after that, or they're going to sabotage, or they're going to be wary. But to the degree you allow people to make their decision, now, it doesn't mean you don't create the environment for them to make the decision that's best, absolutely, but you always give them the out or back door. And again, you don't give them the out or back door so that they take it, but so that they feel comfortable enough with the situation and with you to not have to take it.
I like that a lot. To build the trust, give people the option. They won't probably take it, but just so they feel they're not trapped, and you build that relationship too with rewards. And there's a good analogy there for all of us. And I want to make sure that listeners know that you have a big presence on social media. If they're not already following you at berg.com, you can actually download a free copy, a free chapter of chapter one of Bob's book that we've been talking about today, Adversaries into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. He also is on YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, and can be booked for speaking engagements. If you are with a company or a business, you can actually schedule Bob by calling 561-575-2114 and go to his website. There's a lot of great resources there, some video clips and, of course, his bio and all that good stuff. So what's coming up for you, Bob, for the rest of the year? What cities will you be in, and where can people find you? Are you going to be out on the road doing any public appearances, or are they mostly private engagements?
Yeah, mostly for the rest of this year, it's private engagements. A lot of companies and organizations will have me come in to speak at their sales and leadership conferences, so we're not doing a whole lot of public programs this year. I think we're going to start that up again in 2015 and do something like 10 cities. So.
Okay.
What I would suggest is if people would like to visit me at berg.com, and they can subscribe to my Influence and Success Insights, and we'll also keep them apprised of where I'm going to be in case they would like to come to one of the programs. And as you were kind enough to say, they can also download Chapter 1 of Adversaries into Allies and The Go-Giver.
And also, you know, if you're with a company, you've done a lot of speaking with network marketing companies, and I've noticed that on your website. And, you know, many people are giving home-based businesses a try. It's a great way to supplement income and build some residual earnings. What have you seen that's success principles in some of the companies you've spoken to?
Why are some
of them succeeding them and some of them failing?
Well, as far as the individuals succeed who you know, again, follow the five laws of the Go-Giver, the laws of, you know, focusing on creating value for others, touching the lives of a lot of people with that value, the law of influence, which is your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first, the law of authenticity, which is really showing up as yourself, and the law of receptivity, realizing that it's not just breathing out, you've got to breathe in as well. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin. But it all goes back to focus. And the best network marketers, direct sellers, or anybody who sells anything, the thing that really separates them from the ones who don't do as well, Brenda, is these people are totally laser-focused on bringing value to others. Now, they also learn the skills they need to learn in order to succeed in business. In any business, you know, again, regardless of what you're selling or what you're doing or what you're representing, there have been people who are very successful doing it. So what you want to do is learn from those people, whether through their books or through their seminars or what have you, through the company training, how to be successful. And then I think as you bring up specifically network marketing and direct selling and home-based businesses like that, it's understanding that it's got to be approached as a business, and that you're going to work hard and you're going to do the things you need to do. You're going to get a lot of no's, but it's okay because no's are part of it. A couple good friends of mine, Andrea Waltz and Richard Fenton, wrote a wonderful, wonderful book called Go for No. They're at goforno.com, and it's a small, tiny book. And the book, the premise of the book is that yes is the destination, no is how you get there. And what that means is simply to not only accept the no's but embrace the no's, because the more no's, and of course it's easier said than done, so they kind of show you how to shift your frame in terms of that, because nobody, I don't think anybody likes to hear the word no. But what happens is people hear some no's and they say, oh gosh, well I guess nobody's interested. But that's not true. It just means that to be successful, you've got to go through a lot of no's. And to the degree that you're willing to go through those no's and keep on going, that's the degree to which you're going to be very successful.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great place to wrap up. And we just want to thank you again for your time. We want to encourage everyone to check out Bob Berg's new book, Adversaries into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion, by far his most important work yet. And if you don't already have, I also highly recommend the Go-Giver book, which has really gone on to do, and it's a quick read. It's a great gift, too, for someone with the holidays coming up. It's a nice little book that can be mailed easily, or endless referrals. And, again, check him out online at berg.burg.com. And thank you so much. It's been a real honor and a pleasure to have you on the program. I've been admiring you for some time at a distance, so thank you again for making time.
Well, Brenda, thank you. The honor, privilege, and pleasure, all three of those are totally mine. Thank you so much for having me with you.
Awesome. Well, we're going to wrap up today and encourage people to listen in for the Fridays in September. We will have a variety of people coming on. I will be going to Africa in October on the 20th for 3 weeks, and remains to be seen whether I'll be pre-recording my show for the weeks I'll be gone. But if you'd like to know more about my trip to Africa, or if you want to actually support my trip to Africa, I'll be helping a program called Global Mamas, and it's a program in Ghana that helps empower women through fair trade, and they are making jewelry and sewing clothing by hand and dyeing fabric. You can go to GoFundMe, GoFundMe, GoFundMe.com/7DASINDOG6NASINNANCYXK. So that's the exact page for my little campaign where little donations of $25 adds up, and I really appreciate everyone that has believed in this dream that I've been working on for a number of months, and we'll be taking the message of Alive to Thrive over to Africa. So thank you, everyone. Have a fantastic holiday weekend, and be kind to one another.
Have you heard of Modere yet? Modere is a new online retail brand for today's modern shopper. Modere offers ultra-premium products such as hair care, skin care, and household essentials at crazy affordable prices. Most importantly, Modere's products are safe and non-toxic. In fact, Modere makes some of the safest and most effective clean label products on the market today. Modere has created a fun way for people to try 5 of their premium non-toxic hair and skin products free of cost with no obligation to buy. It's called the Modere Beauty Box. Check this out. Modere will send you a beauty box of premium hair and skin products. You try them, and if you love them as much as we think you will, purchase them. Otherwise, Modere will pay for you to send them back, and you still get to keep the free gift included in the beauty box. Super fun and easy. To demo the Modair Beauty Box at no cost or obligation, just go to beautyboxfreetrial.com. That's beautyboxfreetrial.com to get your Modair Beauty Box today. Again, that's beautyboxfreetrial.com. Modair, we are stylish, safe, smart.